This show was recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation.
Bad English!
With your host, Ivan Aristegeta.
Welcome to Bad English, the support group for English learning trauma patients. And believe me, we're all going to need lots of support when you find out what our English teacher, Eileen, has in mind for this episode. They are called phrasal verbs. It's kind of like West Side Story if the Crips ganged up with the Bloods and started doing stuff. It's like the dark side of the doing words. But none of this is likely to scare our guest. He's gone from knowing a few basic words in English as a refugee to becoming the best English speaker in his family and saving his mum from unwanted attention.
And so we went to the shops, and in Arabic, kiss means plastic bag. Kiss. Yeah. So my mum is like, I buy, now can I have kiss? You know, and the look on the guy's face is like, well, yeah. I knew I looked good today. But just the look on his face, that's what I assumed, you know. It's like, Jesus, I knew I was good looking. Let me call my wife over so she can hear this.
He really loves his mum. More fun stuff from Joe White a little later. But first, let me flex my rant muscle a tad. You see, the way I see it, the English language is the Aldi version of all languages. The definition of English matches the acronym of Aldi. English is a ludicrous display of inconsistency. English is an absolute ode to uncertainty, full of contradictions. More exceptions to rules than rules itself. You know when you go to Aldi to buy peanut butter and you return with a saxophone instead? Same happens with English. In English, you can find letters where you least expect them. The word colonel, C-O-L-O-N-E-L, has no R in it, right? And yet, we say colonel. Wednesday should be spelled W-E-N-D instead of W-E-D-N. And there's more stuff. You can't pronounce the L in salmon, or the B in debt, or the K in knife, or the CH in yacht. Salmon, debt, knife, yacht. I prefer salmon, debt, knife, and yacht. Listen to this. Vain, vain, vain. I just said three different words with three different meanings and three different spellings. Can you tell? I'm going to say them again. Vain, vain, vain. Did you notice that I said them in a different order this time? Sometimes English has attempts to make things easier. For example, verb conjugation. English has 12 verb tenses, and Spanish, my native language, has 23 verb tenses. You might think that English wins here, but no. English language took verbs to another level. The phrasal verbs. These are verbs that are transformed into a whole different meaning when they are used with a preposition. Like get out, get away, get in, get up, get down, get off, get through, get back. These are 8 phrasal forms of the verb to get. Each one of these can be conjugated in 12 different verb tenses. 12 times 8 equals 96! See what I did there? I have explained grammar by using maths. That's like shooting a gun with another gun. They're both evil. English is confusing and unpredictable, and yet extremely popular. I guess humans have an innate attraction to ludicrous displays of inconsistency.
But you'll find no inconsistencies here, just solid amounts of righteous anger and hilarity. Especially from the guy we're about to meet. And of course, from my solid-as-a-rock co-pilot, Eileen Buggan,
Hi. So Bogdan. Great to be here again.
So good to have you here. Today we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine. We've been touring. He's a stand-up comedian. We've toured most of WA together. Very, very, very funny man. De La Hoon, a.k.a. Joe White.
And the crowd goes wild. Thank you so much for having me, Ivan. Pleasure to be here.
Joe, he's from Ethiopia. He's an Ethiopian-Australian comedian, winner of French World Best Comedy Weekly Award 4 years in a row. He's been opening for amazing big international acts. He opened for me as well.
We all made mistakes in the past, you know what I mean? That was.
This is going to be a fun episode. Joe De La Hoon, my friend, welcome to Bad English.
Ivan, thank you so much for having me. And it's De La Hoon.
La Hoon.
There you go.
La Hoon.
Man, you are the only non-Ethiopian person that has ever pronounced it with a T. Everyone else is De La Hoon.
No, De La Hoon.
That's
De La Hoon.
It.
Tell us, I know a lot
of Did
about
you just say tell us?
tell us. Tell us about your story, De La Hoon.
I was born in Tuawa, which is a refugee camp that was bordering Ethiopia and Sudan. So from the camp, we moved to the capital city, Khartoum. And then I left Khartoum when I was 11 and migrated to Perth, Australia. And yeah, been here since then. Haven't even left. Got my citizenship and I went, I'm still going to hang around just in case.
It's a big country.
Just because they don't let me back in. You know? I was like, oh.
So you came here with your family, right?
Yeah, so came here with my mom and my 5 siblings, so I'm 1 of 6. We came as refugees, so you know, before we came to Perth, Australia, we lost everything in the camp, in the refugee camp, to a fire that was started by a babysitter that would come and help mom out because, you know, 6 kids and we're all 18 months to 2 years apart. So while dad's at work, we had a babysitter that randomly would come and just help mom around the house. One day accidentally burnt the whole house down while making, you know, tea or coffee.
Yeah.
And my mom and her only had time to get the kids out. So because the house was made out of sticks, like just a big giant hut in Tuawa, it went up in flames pretty quick. So they got the kids out, but we lost everything. And then, you know, trying to rebuild was a challenge and dad resorted to alcohol for comfort. Then it just got worse and he became abusive and then eventually left the family.
Yeah.
And then mom was left with 6 kids. And so she had to make the decision to leave the camp into the capital city for a better life in the hopes that we get out from Sudan to the Western world. That could be America or wherever. Yeah. Obviously, we didn't expect for things to get worse than they were when we were at the camp. We thought maybe mum will get work, we'll find a house, and then we'll apply for a refugee visa because we were not in our country. Our country is Ethiopia. We were in Sudan. And maybe the refugee visa will see, or they'll assess and see our situation, and it's pretty bad. And they'll get us out. But when we got to Sudan, she couldn't get a job. We couldn't get a house. And we ended up being homeless for almost 2 years. And so we, you know, slept on the street and, you know, no money. So we begged or went through bins to try and get food to eat. And my mom is a very religious woman. So she found the church in the area that we were at. And we slept outside the church because at night they closed it. And during the day, we'd go in, we'd pray, and at night we'd sleep outside. And when you sleep outside, obviously, you know, there's no security around. There's no, you're exposed to the elements of the night. And, you know, with that comes people trying to kidnap you, people trying to kidnap my sisters. And my mom can't stay awake all night. So as security, she would use clothing or she would use ropes and she would tie our limbs to her torso.
Yeah.
And she would have 3 on one side, 3 on the other side. So when people try to take us at night, we'll all wake up because of this rope.
Yeah.
We'll all attack the person and then we'll go back to our corner. That's the strategy behind it. And it worked a couple
of
times,
crazy.
Which is, you know,
yeah,
that's her thinking outside the box.
Man, your mum is a superhero. She's a legend.
Yeah.
So you arrived to Australia and you were 11 years old.
Mm.
So you have 5 more siblings. Are you the oldest? The eldest?
I mean, you, I could be, you know, I'm the wiser, so technically I'm the oldest. That's how you calculate it in an immigrant household. Is the smartest one is the oldest, right? It's not necessarily the oldest, right? Yeah. So I am the oldest, yes, in my family.
It's IQ, it's not IQ, age.
Yeah. Who's made more mistakes this week? All right, you're the baby in the family. And that's usually the eldest, yeah, in our family. So I'm the middle child. I'm a twin. It's myself and a twin sister. And then I have an older brother and an older sister. And I have a younger sister. And the youngest is a brother. And the way we did it when we were in Sudan and we were homeless and looking out for, you know, potential hazards and trouble is my mom would say the three boys, she would allocate one of the girls for one of us to look out for her. And so I would look out for my twin sister, my older brother would look out for my older sister, and my younger brother would look out for my younger sister.
Yeah.
And my mom would make it very clear with a belt in her hand, with a weapon in her hand, she would tell you, if anything happens to any of like your whoever you're responsible for, they won't get in trouble, you'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's how she did security as well. You know?
Yeah.
So my sister's always had security from day one.
Yeah. And at what point did you become Joe?
So when I first came here, you know, it's a completely different world moving to Australia, moving to Perth, Australia. Like, you know, I was probably 11 years old when I saw my first Caucasian person. So I had no idea until I was like 11. And that was the person that approved our immigration papers. So it's a different world where I come from. And when we came here to Perth, Perth, Australia, you know, we were just overwhelmed with everything. So I was very quiet. They took us to our new house and I'm like, this is great, but there's a chance we can get sent back. So I was always just being a good boy. And then, you know, when someone asked me questions, I'm always trying to give them answers that would please them. So when people would ask me what my name is and I would say, Tlahun, they would struggle to pronounce it back. So eventually I was like, I was playing soccer and a group of people went, we can't pronounce your name. Can we give you a nickname? And I said, what's the nickname? They said, a different name, but you can use here and there. And I said, okay. So can we call you Michael? And I said, no. Because I had a friend called Michael and I hated him. You know, I said, don't call me Michael. And then they said, this is when I was probably about 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
It's a church youth group. And then they said, can we call you Joe? And I said, yes, I like Joe. Call me Joe. Because at the time, I associated the name Joe with a singer that I was listening to, and his name was Joe.
Ah,
and he had all the qualities that I wanted. You know, he was confident. He was a ladies man. He was quick with his words, you know. Yeah. So I'm like, and he was stylish. And I said, that's what I want, you know. So I was like, yeah, call me Joe. So that's what I identified it with.
Yeah.
And so I just went with Joe.
Ah, that's
so in school, everyone will know you by Joe, and then and then the teachers.
She gives me up. Yeah. Teachers in class going, Tlahun. And I'm like, oh, it's Tlahun. Who is this person? It's me. And everyone's like, what? And I go, yeah, it's my real name, you know? But eventually, I think, you know, you don't care. The teacher will just say Tlahun, and you go, yeah, present, and everyone knows already.
Yeah.
But throughout my whole schooling, everybody always called me Joe. No one called me Tlahun.
Right.
Except the principal or the teacher or
whoever, you know, was reading your name out.
Yeah, whoever was reading my name out. And I was the only black guy in my year. So there's no black guys in my year. Oh. And I was the second black guy in the whole school in Perth.
Right.
So when people said, do you know Joe? People would go, who's Joe? They'll go, you know, the black guy, Joe Black. And that's how Joe Black came about. So they were calling me Joe Black.
Oh.
Not as an insult, but more so like, yeah. Oh, it's a black guy. That was the year I went to school.
There's a lot of Joes.
Yeah, we're going to have to co-write together. So they would call me Joe Black, you know. And when the opportunity came to go on stage and be a comedian, I was like, I'm already going as Joe Halu, which is my last name is Halu.
Okay.
And so I went, I'll just keep telling this. Like when I went into the work system after school, it was also Joe on the resume. And then when I went to perform, I was like, Joe Halu. And then I went, it doesn't make sense. I'm like undivided. I need to commit either to the full white name or I need to like go to Tlahun Halu. So I went, why don't I just be funny? Instead of going as Joe Black, why don't I just commit? And my friend goes, yeah, go Joe White, which is the opposite. So it'll be funny. So instead of doing Tlahun, I just went committed with and went, yeah, let's go Joe White, which is like the whitest name you can think of.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yes, it is.
You know what I mean? Every Joe, you know, Joe Doe.
And right there with the introduction of, you know, the name is your first like surprise for the audience.
Yeah. And they laugh because I'm like, ta-da, it's not what you expect. And that's the outcome I want when I'm on stage is laughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I try to like, do whatever I can to get it quickly, you know, as quick as possible. And so I thought, why not? But that was me in the beginning as well. Well, I've changed a lot now, you know. Eventually, I'll go back to Talahun, you know. I'm not ashamed of it. I'll go back. Yeah. But Talahun, I was named after him. He's a famous Ethiopian singer called Talahun Gassese. I think my mom, that's her favorite singer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen a very funny joke story that you tell on stage about the first experiences when you arrived to Australia and yeah. Centrelink and with your mum. Can you please share?
Yeah, so a lot of my comedy is derived from my life experiences, and a lot of it just tend to be, you know, my observation when I'm hanging out with mum. And so there was a time where when we went to Centrelink and you know, we were advised that if we go to Centrelink, my mom will get money to help her out because she's got kids.
And,
six kids, you know. So they would say, go to Centrelink and you'll get like 600, you know, every fortnight. And my mom would need a translator. And my English wasn't good, but it was close. You know, I knew how to say before I left Sudan, they'll teach us, this is chair, this is spoon. So in the family, I was good at memories, you know. I remembered and I'm like, this is chair, this is spoon. My mom's like, he'll translate. So I went. And the lady was like, yeah, we're going to give her money, you know, to help her out. But more so, my mom's like, what's the money for? And I said, oh, mom wants to know what the money's for. And she said, oh, it's for the kids. I'm like, oh, it's for the kids, mom. And my mom instantly, obviously, she was just freaked out. And she's like, no, the children are not for sale, you know. And so we stormed out and, you know.
Want your money.
Yeah. She's like, I should have sold them back home if that's what I wanted, you know. I fought so hard to bring them here in this country and you want to buy them. I tried to convince her to sell my older brother. He had all the good clothes that I wanted. So, yeah, so there was that. But there was also just many different things, man. When we came here. Yeah, I would always be with mom. I would always translate. And because I love my mom so much, I always want her to be safe. So if I sense she's doing something that would attract attention and it might not be good attention, I'm quick to jump in and help. You know, I'm just very protective, like I've always been.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the English language is something that could get her in trouble. So we were at the shops and we finished doing shopping and she wanted a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. And we spoke Arabic when we came here. That was our first language because we came from Sudan.
Okay.
Right? Arabic was our go-to language because that's where we were in Sudan. So when we came here, instantly our go-to language was Arabic and we'll mix it with English because we have to speak English, right?
Yeah.
And so we went to the shops and in Arabic, kiss means plastic bag. Kiss. Yeah. So my mom is like, I buy, now can I have kiss? You know, and the look on the guy's face is like, well, I knew I looked good today. But just the look at his face, that's what I assumed, you know. It's like, Jesus, I knew I was good looking. Let me call my wife over so she can hear this.
Yeah.
And I always say my mom will get what she wants. You know, she's very driven.
Yeah. Well, you know that in another language, the word in Finnish for bag is P-U-S-S-I.
Wow, is it?
Yeah. And, and a big bag is M-E-G-A-P-U-S-S-I.
Wow.
I don't even know if I can say that word.
That's so funny.
M-E-G-A, mega.
P-U-S-S-I.
Yeah. You can say it.
On.
Trust me, I've spoken to the producers.
Mega pussy.
I spoke to the producers. They said, make sure you tell Ailing she can say it. So, you've got full permission.
I've got the green
light. So you also speak Amharic and Tigri?
Yeah, so I speak Amharic. I learned that from my mom. And then I speak Tigrinya, which I learned from my dad. Tigrinya, which I learned from my dad. But when we communicate at home, it's all over. So I'll speak to my mom in like three languages, you know.
Yeah.
She'll speak to me in Amharic. I'll respond in Amharic, English, Tigrinya, a bit of Arabic sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like there's too much going on in the house, you know. There's too many languages and too many people.
Yeah.
You know, even when someone gets in trouble and she will call them, she will just yell out all the names before she gets to yours, and you're like, yeah, we're very chilled now. Everything is all right. You know?
But, how's her English level after so many years? So how many years since you arrived?
We came in 98, so we've been here almost 30 years, I would say. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And her English is still terrible. I always tell her off. Come on, Mom. We've been here almost there. What's your excuse here? 30 years.
What's her biggest struggle with English? What's the thing that she messed up the more?
She doesn't hang out with enough white people. That's the main problem.
She doesn't need English.
It's not the language. The language is not hard. It's just, I think, her learning it. You know, with now that she goes to work and stuff like that, and, you know, she's been gone for, what, over 10 years she's been working. But, you know, when we first came here, I think the challenge for her, or the challenge for a lot of immigrant parents that come at a late age compared to their kids, is we have to go to school, we have to go and hang out with our friends outside. If you want to skateboard or you want to play sports, you're mixing with people who are speaking English, and, you know, you have to learn quick.
Yeah.
Where the parents, they, you know, my mom, when we came here, she went to Ethiopian Orthodox Church. She went to her Ethiopian friend's house, Ethiopian gatherings, you know. So there was everybody spoke Amharic.
Yeah.
And so she was never around English until we came home and, you know, and we speak to her because we can't be bothered teaching her to speak. We're just young. We're like, you got to learn like all of us, but we know better now, you know.
Yeah.
And so it took her a while and she still struggles.
And she probably, her English is probably, you know, increased tenfold since she started working, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's just 100%. Really needs basis.
100%. I tell that story on stage where I picked her up from work and she wanted to say, what did you do today? Yeah. So she wanted to say, what did you do today? Uh-huh. And so she goes, what today do you... and she just kept stuffing it up. And I had half an hour drive. So in my head, you know, I was like, you have half an hour drive. Teach your mom how to say it correctly. You know, I could have easily put music on and went, yeah, mom, it was good, you know. But I'm like, mom, let's get you saying it properly.
Okay.
It's what did you do today, you know.
Right.
And I just kept going, what did you do today? And my mom will just constantly stuff it up, right? And then she just kept trying. And she was giving it a shot. She was trying. And then she goes, what dude did you do today? And I was like, okay, let's play some music. Let's play.
Get that.
Yeah. I nearly crashed the car. That's how much I was laughing. And I went, it's so easy being a comedian. And I don't have to write anything. I don't even have to give it 10%.
From then on, you're like, mom, ask the question.
Yeah. From then, I'm like, mom, let's do more stuff and I'll follow you with pen and paper.
So give me an example of your mom mixing all the languages in one sentence.
One word in Arabic or one word in Amharic would mean two words or three words in English.
Yeah.
Where mom would just say one word in English, thinking that word would cover three things. And it's like, no, you still got to say the other two words for it to make sense. So I think mainly her problem is it's just the fact that we say one word to explain a couple of words in English, but also Arabic is back to front and English is, you know, you start from left and you go to right, where we go from right to left. So there's all this just in her head.
Yeah.
When did you start? When you became a comedian? When did you decide to do comedy?
Yeah, I was a banker before I went in to do comedy. So I was a relationship manager for one of the banks in Perth. Mm. And I didn't like it. It was very depressing. And at the time, I'd just come out of a 10-year relationship breakup. You know how it is.
I know how it is.
You know, Ivan, you've been through five of them. All up 50 years, you've lost there. But jeez, how do you look so young?
Olive oil.
So, you know, I'd come out of a long-term relationship and it makes you question, you know, life and your purpose. And I thought, you know, what is my purpose? It's not coming in and clocking in from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. or sometimes staying late and taking work back home. There has to be more to life, you know. So I started just setting goals where I'll try different things that I like.
Yep.
And people have recommended I should try and see if I do like it and if I could make it into a career.
So you were a funny banker.
Yeah. You know what? In banking, you couldn't be funny. You have to be serious all the time. I didn't like it. And then one day my sister called me and she was crying, my twin sister, and she said, man, you have to come over ASAP. I went over and she said, you're not going to believe what happened. I was at the Coventry markets and there was this place where there was like fortune tellers or psychics. You know how if,
you told me the story. Yeah, so, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so
it's a great story.
So my sister went in there, and this lady freaked her out with what she knew. Oh. And so my sister went home, and she, you know, she was freaked out. And she called me, and she's like, "You have to go see what she says about you." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I'll give it a shot." Because you know, I'm trying everything, so I'm not very close-minded anymore. I'm like, I'm open to anything right now. Once you're at the bottom, it's only up.
Yes,
you know what I mean. So I'm like, I'll try it. So I went to the psychic. I didn't say anything, and I always walk around with a smile on my face. You know. So I went in, I sat down, and she was like, "Oh, have you done this before?" I said, "No." And she said, "Oh, I'll tell you everything, good or bad." She told me some bad stuff, and I was like, "Yeah, life's already shit. Who cares?" Right?
Yeah, the bottom's a good place to be sometimes, you know?
Yeah. And then she said, "Oh, what do you do for work?" I said, "I was a banker." And she said, "That's terrible. That's not your personality, you know?" I said, "Yeah, what do you think I should do then? You know, you're the psychic. Tell me." And she said, "All right, I'll tell you." And she was like, "Do you do anything with stage stuff? Do you perform?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Are you a rapper by any chance?" And I said, "Are you stereotyping?" And she started laughing. I know. She's like, no, I'm not stereotyping. I swear. And I said, "No, I'm just kidding." I said, "No, I don't rap." And she said, "Are you a motivational speaker?" I said, "No, but I do listen to a lot of it to keep me going." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Okay." She said, "It's something to do with stage. I don't know what it is, but it's your job is to find it."
Wow.
And she's like, "You're going to be good at it. I can see a big crowd. You're going to be successful at it, and you're going to be happy. The type of energy I sense is you walk in and you're high-fiving everyone. That's the energy." So she's like, "Your job is to find it." And I was like, "All right." And before I left, I said, "Man, a month ago, a friend of mine was like, you should try stand-up comedy since you're on this path of trying everything." Yeah. And I wrote a page of jokes about my cousin because he was annoying me at the time.
Before you met this lady?
Yeah.
You already had your jokes written?
Like, I wrote a page about him.
Wow.
But then I just put it away and went, "This is stupid." Now, I don't believe in all that psychic stuff. You know, I'm Orthodox Christian, and in our religion, obviously, we don't believe in any of that. If I tell my mom, she'll slap me. So she'll be like, "How dare you have a meeting with the devil?" That's how she'll describe it. But I'm like, you know what? Mom's not even from like this generation. You know, this generation, you gotta be open-minded. So I'm like, I'm open-minded. And the lady's like, "You have to do stand-up comedy. You have to try it. If you don't, you're going to be an old man and regret the way you lived your life." And I found a way. And then I did my first 5 minutes. And I'm not even exaggerating, Ivan. My first 5 minutes, I got 2 applause breaks.
Beautiful.
You know, and wow. The feeling, the reason why I'm telling you I got applause breaks is not to brag, but just to say that's how well it was received. And as someone who's never experienced that feeling before, where, you know, you're at the bottom, but then now you're on stage and you're performing and a group of people are applauding something you created and you think it's funny, just feel like you've been given a second chance at life, you know? Yeah. I was driving, pulling over, crying, going, "This is amazing. I found my purpose."
Yeah.
Has your mother seen you perform?
You know, she wasn't quick to come and watch me perform because she knew I'd left banking. But I said, "Look, I've left banking, but I'm still doing the finance degree." I wasn't, but I didn't have to tell her that part, you know? And then she came and watched my first 45 minutes. And that was 6 months after I started doing comedy. I decided, you know what? I'll just go and do 45 minutes.
45 minutes after 6 months. That's... Yeah.
That's
unheard of in the comedy world. Like, you can't, like, but it's great.
It wasn't the best, but I didn't bomb. That's the beauty of it.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? I didn't bomb, but it wasn't like, I look at it now and I go, "Ugh, gotta delete this, gotta delete that," you know?
Trim the fat.
Yeah, trim the fat. Yeah. But there's still a lot of stuff in there, like the World Vision joke. And I go, "Oh, you might have seen me on TV before." And people wonder. And then I go, "World Vision, you know? You look familiar. Have you wrote me a letter before?" You know, to randoms in the crowd. That was in my first 5 minutes.
Beautiful. Yeah. I still have it.
And I still use it, just keep adding to it. And so my mom, she was in the crowd when I was talking about her and talking about, you know, the bit about where she was like, "Can I have kiss?" That was in my first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
She was in the crowd laughing and she's like, "This is so true." But also my mannerisms come out and my behavior. I try to be as much as I can my mom. And so she sees that and she goes, "Holy smokes, this is how I look like?" I'm like, "Yes, this is how you look like."
Say an impersonator.
Yeah. I used to do a bit when I took her colon cleansing. How personal and invasive is that process? That was in my first 5 minutes and I used to act it out and she's there watching going, "I'm never letting him take me anywhere."
So now I'm going to put you in the spot.
Ooh.
So you're a banker. You've done this amazing stuff in comedy.
Yep.
You're teaching your mom how to speak English.
Yep.
Let's see what Eileen's got for you to see if you know this language properly. So don't go easy on him.
No, go okay. easy because I'll tell everyone what you said.
You probably know.
Side part. I'll tell everyone. I'll get out there and I'll walk around with a board that says, this is what she said.
Well, what we're going to look at today are verbs, but they're not just any old verbs. Uh-huh. So verbs are action words. But we're going to look at phrasal verbs.
What's
so,
phrasal?
Okay, so a phrasal verb is a verb.
Wait, firstly, what's a verb?
A verb is an action word. So, talk.
What's action?
It's an action word. It's like, pow.
Okay. Now you're speaking my language. Okay.
Flash.
Okay, cool. Zing, flash, you got me. All right.
Actually, that's onomatopoeia. But anyway, I'll come back to that.
Onomatopoeia.
Yeah?
Oh, I heard that in a rap once. I was like, that food sounds delicious.
Okay, so an action word.
Okay.
But these verbs, phrasal verbs, have a base verb and a particle.
I'm sweating already.
Which can be a preposition or an adverb. So that's not important. Just think of a verb that has two words, a base verb and a particle.
I'm not scared to try. I've got my citizenship. So I'm allowed to screw up.
So, okay. So, for example, a verb is like to look.
Okay.
But when you add a preposition to look up, it changes the meaning of the base verb.
Mm.
So look and look up, not as in look up, but to look up a word.
Okay.
What does look up mean?
To search.
Yeah. Okay. So what is to look up? To search.
Beautiful.
Here's $100, Eva.
Thank you.
But then you added, if you look up to, so you add two words to the word look, to look up to, it means to...
admire.
To admire.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eva. Where were you in high school when I needed you, Eva? This is great. I'm passing so good.
So I thought we'd use a different word and see how many you can get. But you got the idea now. You have to, because you guys' English is so good.
Yeah, Ivan's English is next level. I'm like, wow.
It's unfathomable.
And what? Yeah. Get out of here. Using words
now
like
he's
that?
Insulting me.
Unfathomable.
Unflammable.
Did you say flammable? Unflammable? That's
inflammable.
Oh, you know what word I struggle with? I was actually talking to my girlfriend outside before I came in, and she's like, babe, when you're on there and you're talking about like clothing, and when you say, don't say clothes, it's clothes.
And
she's like, I wasn't going to correct you by doing a podcast, so it's clothes.
Clothes, yeah.
And she's like, if we have kids, I'm teaching them English. I was like, okay.
That's a really, really common one, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when you say months and month, because I used to say months.
Oh,
I used to go, how many months is it? And my buddy would be like, when did you get here? It's months. And I'm like, yes, sorry.
My example is one breath, two breaths.
Oh, yeah.
That's the same as
breaths.
Yeah, one breath.
Okay, so this is the game. So to get is the base verb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you get something, you...
catch.
Yeah, receive or acquire it.
Acquire.
Okay.
I'm
but
good
if
at
you want to get
things.
Something across...
Yeah.
What
you
does that
throw
mean?
At Ivan's face.
No.
Is it? It's throw, yeah, to get across?
Yeah, but if you want to get an idea across to someone...
communicate.
Yeah, that's right.
Well done.
I got one?
Yeah, that was it.
Are you guys mocking me right now? Or did I actually get one?
You
got one.
Yeah, that's
hell
right.
Yes.
You did it.
And
you literally
based on your
out.
Based on your energy, I'm definitely not coming back. I'm not.
No,
I got one.
You're so good at it.
Can we call my mom, please? I got one.
You should get your mom on the phone.
Yeah.
Some of these.
She'll just be like, can you please put him in jail? Tell him to go back to banking.
I reckon we all nailed it. A big, big thanks to my friend Joe White. Follow him on all the socials and check out his website for tour dates, etc. And of course, big thanks to our amazing English decipherer, Eileen Bagan. And thanks for being a wonderful audience and listening to Bad English. Don't forget to tell your friends, subscribe, follow us, Bad English is a production of Ear Candy Media for SBS Audio. Our producer is Bez Zode. Sound design and edit, Tiffany Dimmock. Executive producer, Ian Walker. The podcast's manager at SBS Audio is Caroline Gates. Thanks to Joel Supple and the SBS Audio team. I'm Ivan Aristeguieta. Adios. Till next time.